Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and I am joined live in studio today with guest host Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, everyone.
And we've got a special guest waiting right now on the line for us, sitting Congressman Juan Ciscomani. Are you there, Juan?
I'm here, guys. Good to talk to you.
Good morning, Juan. Thank you so much for joining us on Jump in Tucson. Energy has got to be high right now in the Ciscomani campaign. I could feel it from right across the plaza over there at River Inn Campbell. I could feel those great spirits coming from your campaign offices from your victory last night. How are you feeling this morning, brother?
Well, I'm feeling great, but I'm feeling even better with your energy too, man. You're pumped up, you're fired up, and I think it's great for everyone to be listening to you guys and the energy that you bring in. We had a great victory last night. You're right. It was a decisive one, and you know, we're on to the next step in November. But it was a great night for us, and we're you know, congratulations to all the other winners also out there. Some races are still to be called, but you know, but we should be firming that up here in this week, I think.
Congressman, the energy last night was very high at your celebratory party. It was amazing to be there. One of the things that I think that gets overlooked at times is how hard of a worker you are out there knocking on doors, being everywhere. Where are you going in the future? How can people get involved to make sure that we keep this really, really important seat?
Well, thanks, Josh, and it was great to see you last night. And as you saw, that one of the things that catches my attention and gets me really, really energized about our camp is the diversity that you see in these rooms. You see people that are from all walks of life. You see a lot of families, retired people, young kids. I was doing a TV interview, and one of the boys comes up and like hugs me because I have my football team there, the little kids that I coach in flag football. So they come up, and that's the kind of energy that I think our district needs and sees from us. All day yesterday, we were out at the polls. On most of the polls, we had them covered, and I was bouncing between different ones. Nothing beats the grind of shaking hands, talking to people, showing up, and doing the job. You know, last time it was all campaign when we were in this point. Now it's obviously campaign, but with the majority of the time spending and actually doing the job, representing, listening to people, going back to Washington. Now, thankfully, we're not going back until early September, so I'm here for the whole month of August, and we're going to continue to do our job. Job as the member of Congress here, running, visiting some of the sites, and talking to people about legislation for veterans, just continuing the work that we've done for the last almost 2 years, with, of course, a lot of campaigning as well. So we'll be able to balance it all.
So campaigning is obviously top of mind going into November, but now that you've been a sitting congressman, what are some of your accomplishments or projects that you've worked on back in D.C. that you are most proud of?
Yeah, so that's a good question. When we look back at, you know, the main thing that we've worked on and the results that we've been able to showcase, it has top of mind for me has to be our work around veterans. We have over 70,000 veterans in our district. And this is the ninth largest veteran population in the whole country in terms of congressional districts. And we have a base here and an installation in Sierra Vista. So work for our veterans has been essential in terms of legislation that has also offered me an opportunity to work across party lines. The Veteran Affairs Committee is one of the most bipartisan committees in Congress. So I've been able to work on legislation with both Republicans and Democrats to help our veterans regarding disability claims or medical benefits and so on. So that's been important. Also, one thing that doesn't get covered by like in any campaign commercial or trailer or anything is the constituent services that we offer. When people call the office, they call with real problems and real issues, money stuck in Social Security or Medicare, or they the IRS is hounding them for an old debt or something, and they can't get through. They can't get answers. So we've helped a lot of people with that. Millions of dollars returned to our constituents through our advocacy work of calling in on their behalf to federal agencies and making sure that they get the benefits that they deserve, and also the money that is stuck in the system that is owed to them, or bad claims by the IRS against them. So all these things are things that it's just like the day in, day out of the job that I really enjoy. We're in the people business, and we have to make sure that we get out there and do that for our constituents, and not to mention the community project funding opportunities, the money that we've been able to bring back to the district. As an appropriator, my number one job is to make sure we're fiscally responsible and also to make sure that Arizona is winning when these resources get distributed to the states. And I want to make sure that CD6 is at the forefront of that. And we've been able to find some hospitals in Wilcox, fire stations in the town of Pima, JTED building here in Tucson, different roads in Sierra Vista. So these are all things. It's results. Basically, it's actually doing something, not just talking. Now we have a record to stand on, and I'm very proud of it.
So Juan, congratulations again on that victory last night. One thing that does seemingly unite the Republican Party is some of this border legislation that's coming up over here. Can you talk about what might be upcoming with respect to the border, given our proximity here in Tucson and the importance of our federal border?
Yeah, when I talk to people, the top two issues, Grant, is the border, and this is where we've introduced several pieces of legislation. Some have passed at the House. The unfortunate part is that when you have this divided government, they go to the Senate and just die there. Senators haven't been picking them up. And that's one of the most frustrating things that I've experienced, and that I also hear from people when they're like, why haven't we done something on the border? You got to look at, we passed them out of the House, they go to the Senate, and that is the problem with not having control. The Republicans having the majority in the Senate, but also not having the White House. That's why I'm excited about taking the White House back in November so we can actually pass this legislation through and actually solve the problem that it has been getting worse month after month, year after year, since the Biden administration took over this issue, including Vice President Harris leading the effort on the border, which has been a complete disaster. So this is something that we got to do. The House has been playing a lot of defense, stopping a lot of what President Biden wanted to push through. But we need to obviously be playing offense, too, and that comes with the victories in November. And then the other thing is the cost of living. I hear this from seniors that are in fixed incomes, families like ours that are just spending more and more every month on food and groceries and electric bill and all the things that we didn't used to pay as much just a year or two ago. Now we're paying a lot more for the same amount. And that's just not sustainable. And families, I think, I don't know if you guys have seen this shift. It's gotten, they losing hope. It's like, well, maybe things are turning around by themselves, and they haven't. They're getting worse. So we need
they absolutely are getting worse, Congressman. And I know that we've got to wrap up here in just a minute because you've got a really busy schedule. But I really want to ask you, this ground game, volunteers going into November, how can they reach you? How can they get involved with your campaign? How can the community come behind you and support you to guarantee that we've got a win here coming up in November?
Yeah, we're going to need a lot of help, Josh. So thanks for bringing that up. Please go to JuanCiscomani.com and you can sign up to volunteer, make phone calls. Our kids are phone banking constantly. So if you get a call from a kid about our campaign, that's probably one of our six. So we've got some of them calling. And it's going to take a lot of us. It's going to take a lot of us to step up and volunteer, show up, make phone calls, talk to friends, host house meetings if we can, spread the word. But reach out to us if you have specific ideas. We're open. This is going to be a community victory, and I'm proud to be leading the way on this. But we're going to need a lot of help. So please reach out to us, and we'll make sure to get back to you.
Thanks so much, Juan. That is sitting Congressman Juan Ciscomani, fresh off of his victory in the Republican primary last night. Thanks for joining us, Juan. And don't go anywhere. Josh and I are going to break down some election results from last night. Coming back after the break on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m., The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you for making us part of your morning. I'm joined live in studio again with Josh Jacobson, steering leader of the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Welcome back, Josh.
Good morning, Grant. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so last night, obviously, it was the primary election, right? A very important day for Southern Arizona, right? And not normally the type of elections we talk about here on Jump In, where we're talking restaurants, right? This isn't the Tucson Weekly Best Of for a best margarita or best burger. This is going to be for your state senate. This is going to be for your Pima County Board of Supervisor. This could be for your federal senator. There's a lot of changes coming up, and a large portion of these races are decided in the primary. So why don't we break down a few of those numbers here, Josh? There were 173,391 votes cast yesterday. 13.4% of total votes were done in person. If you want to break that down between Republicans and Democrats, there were 6.5% of Democrat votes cast in person, meaning that essentially 93.5% of Democrats mailed in their ballots. However, 22% of Republican ballots were cast in person, giving about a 3.5-time advantage to in-person votes on the Republican side. Trending that I think we found similar in 2022, no?
Yeah, absolutely. And then the overall turnout was roughly 25%. That's the number we're looking at. And of course, it's never enough. It's never enough. We're not getting enough people actually turning out to make decisions on our elected officials that are going to represent us. And we really have to, you know, look at that independent part, but that's tough getting those folks involved.
Low voter turnout in the primaries has been a continuous problem here, both in southern Arizona and nationwide. I've seen statistics that suggest that 85% of the legislative districts in Arizona are essentially decided in the primary, because of those 30 legislative districts, so many of them are either far left-leaning or far right, meaning that whoever the candidate that wins that primary essentially walks in, you know, scot-free into the office there. And so let's break down a couple of those races that I think are really pivotal in this. Like, to begin with, we've got LD 17, right? We've got Cory Maguire and Rachel Jones running on the House side of things. And then we've got on the Senate race, Justine Wodzak and Vince Leach. That one is a nail biter, pretty much too close to call right now, correct?
Absolutely. It is so close, and that is obviously one of the most important races that we're looking at statewide right now, because that is going to be a dogfight going into the general election. The Democrats clearly have their eye on that position, and they absolutely want to flip the legislature. And for advocacy groups here down in Tucson, where, you know, we're quite underrepresented with conservative values and ideals, it will make it more difficult for us to be able to lobby at the legislature and try to get some of our positions through.
So we're looking at that race as being only a little over a 200 vote difference as of the election results we pulled this morning, only about 45 minutes ago, and potentially with some ballots left to be counted on in-person voters, which by the statistics we were looking at are going to most likely be right of center voters. Do you think that gives Justine Wodzak a chance still in this Senate race?
I mean, like you said, this one is really too close to call. I can tell you Tucson Crime Free Coalition, we endorsed Senator Wodzak. We ran 7 different bills with her in the last session, and we made a lot of good inroads. But clearly, Vince Leach has done a good job campaigning. He's gotten a lot of support behind him. And here we are. I mean, this is clearly going to come down to the wire.
And so this LD 17 could define the balance of power in both the state House and state Senate, where currently Republicans have a 1-seat lead in each of those 2 divisions of Congress. And so losing even one of those could be a pretty massive shift of power in the state, no?
Absolutely. So that's going to be one to watch. And then maybe we talk about some other surprises that happened here locally.
So let's go into county attorney to start with, right? Like, ultimately, last night was supposed to be a dogfight. We had a race that drew more money than almost all the other local races combined for county attorney. And this was the Democrat primary. There was no independent candidate and no Republican candidate running for county attorney. This was incumbent Laura Conover versus Mike Jetty. And it looks to be an absolute landslide for current Pima County attorney Laura Conover.
Absolutely. And it was somewhat surprising. You know, we had people that came out of all different sectors of the legal community making a case for Mike Jetty, talking about, you know, areas that have not been delivered on under the Conover camp. But at the end of the day, she was able to circle the wagons. She was able to get out the vote and won pretty handily.
So what does this say, Josh, about primaries? Because here we had a candidate who, in Jetty, who was essentially universally appealing from a center to, you know, really kind of both sides, probably 10 or 20% on the parabolic curve of politics, and got absolutely trounced in a Democrat primary.
Yeah, I think that we need to kind of sit back and look at how the campaigns were run. There was a lot of, I would say, fact-based criticism against Laura Conover. And that came from groups like Emerge, that came from retired judges. There was even a sitting judge that subtly made a case that things weren't going in the right direction. However, what we saw was people still supported that. And then on the Mike Jetty side, you had a 17-year career prosecutor, a candidate that had an amazing resume, somebody that was able to go out and really get bipartisan support, which was then used against him going into this election. And the number one thing that Laura Conover campaigned on was that Mike Jetty was receiving Republican money from conservative business owners, and they just hammered that over and over and over again. And that message stuck to some extent, but she had the power of the incumbency. Laura Conover is also she's a hard worker. She's out in the community. She shakes a lot of hands. Clearly, she had a ground game, which I don't think that we have seen this level of a ground game even in the District 3 area. The powers to be in this area really got behind their person and made sure that doors were knocked, calls were made. And as much as I don't like the outcome, I have to say that I respect their hustle. And unless the opposition can ever figure that out, this is what we can expect.
I think this is a really notable fact here about how an old school ground game essentially beat a technologically superior campaign that was covered with banner ads and placements on Facebook and X, and nothing beats knocking doors and shaking hands and kissing babies, even in 2024.
And having that in-person dialogue, being able to be in front of somebody, being memorable. I mean, we know this all the time in the restaurant business, right? We've got to touch our customers so many times. We have to be at that table. We have to greet them at the counter. And that was something that the Conover camp delivered on, as well as seemingly the Jen Allen camp really got out there.
Do you think that there's even like a sentiment against anybody that has any sort of bipartisan support? Because as Juan talked about his, you know, bipartisan support, there was a sector of the far right Republican Party that was against Juan, and here was a sector of the far left Democrat Party against Mike, both of which we would consider to be centrist candidates.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I think happens when we miss the conversation, when we are not looking at the demographics of the voting base. Being out there and getting in front of people and understanding where they're coming from it's just paramount. So if you look at Juan's district being nearly a third, a third, and a third, it's a very competitive district. That's why he does well there. But then when you're looking at the Pima County race, it is so blue that it was a remarkable strategy that they had to paint Mike Jetty as something that he clearly is not.
No,
and it worked.
Without a doubt. And you had referenced the Jen Allen win. We're talking about Pima County Supervisor District 3 Democrat primary over there. And that was a four-horse race, right? You mm-hmm. had Jen Allen and April Ignacio, Edgar Soto, and Miguel Cuevas all running. And it looks to me that Jennifer Allen has absolutely run away with this one as well, too, in spite of having competition from more centrist candidates.
And she's somebody that raised a tremendous amount of money and had the ground game. You know, in the Pima County attorney's race, there was a tremendous amount of money raised in that. But again, you have to raise the money, but you still have to have the ground game.
Is this something moving forward you think that we've got to retool as both Tucson Crime Free Coalition, as business owners, as centric, normal individuals out there to pick up our ground game? You know, is that something the Republican Party's got to do better?
I do think that is 100% a fact. And I will also say that I'm a bit not happy that one of the overlying messages in this race was essentially Republicans don't have a voice. They don't have an opinion in Pima County, and their money is no good in politics. And to demonize the conservative business owners, that is really rough.
Without a doubt. And I think we saw that on the Jetty campaign. He might have been portrayed as not Democrat enough, quite frankly. And perhaps in hindsight, which is always 2020, that turned out to be quite a defect. But talking about ground game, when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on Pima County Sheriff candidate Heather Lappin, someone that had a strong game and got an early lead in this primary, looking like she's going to coast a victory on this one. We've got some questions for Heather Lappin coming up after the break on Jump in Tucson. Don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we are joined live with co-host Josh Jacobson. Welcome back, Josh.
Good morning, everyone.
And we have on the line right now, hot off of election energy and a strong ground game over here, Pima County Sheriff candidate on the Republican side, Heather Lappin. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well. Thanks so much for joining us on Jump in Tucson this morning. You must be exhausted after a long night. Are you at work right now?
No, I knew to take the day off. I took yesterday and today off. Yeah.
Amazing. It's looking like you're going to be victorious in this Republican primary over here. Have any of the news agencies called it yet?
I haven't seen anybody call it. We keep watching, but nobody's calling it. I just got the Luminaria just reached out to me, and they said that we're nowhere near recount numbers, so it's looking good. So.
Well, congratulations on that one over there. You've had a really strong ground game for this sheriff race. I think of all the candidates out there, you had not just the biggest and best signs, but the biggest presence out there as well, too. And maybe that was the difference. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's so much that goes into it. And, you know, I think I have like 30,000 votes, and, you know, one of the other candidates had 10, and then the other one had about 27. So, you know I didn't reach all those people, so how did they know to vote for me? So I had to be signs. It had to be, you know, my radio ads, whatever the text messaging that we did. So it's hard to tell. I'm new to this game, so I listen to my experts that surround me.
So, Heather, you had a lot of energy in the room last night. I know that as you're watching the polls come in, you know, you're a little bit nervous, but you did do a lot of preparation coming up to this. So, you know me, I'm always a big fan of getting your website out there. How can people get in touch with you?
Thank you. Heatherforsheriff.com. That's Heather, the number 4, sheriff.com. And yeah, we had a great room last night. I was supposed to do another event, and I didn't make it over there because everybody came so early last night. So it was a really fun night. But yeah, lots of nerves for sure because you just don't know what to expect.
So again, going towards November, what Grant and I have been talking a lot about is the importance of the ground game, making sure that we've got the volunteers, we're knocking doors, we're making phone calls, we're raising money. Going forward, what are you going to be focusing on? How are you going to get people rallied behind you? What does the future look like for the Heather Lappin camp?
Well, it's going to be busy. There's so much work that needs to be done moving forward. It's all of the above of what you just mentioned. I'm definitely going to need money. We went all out with our money. You know, spending it to win this primary, and so we're gonna need money to make our message louder than the Democrat incumbent, and we definitely need volunteers. So going on that website, heatherforsheriff.com, and you want to be on the volunteer team, we would love to have you. We need to be knocking doors. We need to be out at events. Any events that are, you know, larger than 100 people, we need to have representation there. So it's going to take a lot of work for sure.
So Heather, I can probably recite your stump speech and your resume, but for the listeners that might be new and they might be hearing Heather Lappin for the first time, why don't you give us a quick rundown of what your background is, who you are, your qualifications, and why you are going to win this race in November?
Okay, I appreciate it. Yeah, so I will celebrate 20 years with the department in December. I started out in the jail as a booker, and then 19 in October as a commissioned deputy. So I'm currently a lieutenant, and I work in the jail. I actually run our intake section in the jail right now. But I've done, as a lieutenant, I've done a bunch of things. I've run our training section. I've run two different districts, San Javier and Green Valley. I've also been the wellness section commander. And one of the things that I did that I'm super proud of is I was selected out of the state of Arizona by Arizona Post, and that's our governing agency for all law enforcement in Arizona, to be on their leadership team. So I traveled around Arizona for a year and trained law enforcement in leadership principles. And I think that's really where I got my opinion on leadership and my opinion that we need new leadership in the Sheriff's Department. So with that, I'm also educated. I just finished my master's with in organizational leadership with an emphasis in criminal justice. I'm an adjunct professor for Pima Community College, Puerto Rada Español. My personal life, I am married for 22 years. I have three children, 21, 19, and 17. And I was also on the Tucson Women's Commission. I was selected in 21, I think, 2021 for that. But overall, I see a different future for our department than the decades of historic leadership that we've had. We've had decades and decades, minus the 4 years that Napier was in office, of the same, you know, good old boy type leadership. And I'm here to change it. That's what I want to do. I have watched a lot of people that I care about get treated really poorly because they don't kiss the ring well enough. And I want to change that culture, and I want to change that because Pima County suffers because of that. So they're suffering with their tax dollars, and they're suffering with decisions that are being made that are affecting their, you know, livelihoods.
Heather, looking at all 15 counties in the state of Arizona that elect their sheriffs, has there ever been a woman sheriff elected in the state of Arizona?
No, there hasn't, not in the entire state. So I think it was 1944, the male sheriff in Maricopa County, he did something where he was indisposed, and his wife took over. But so she did that for 2 years. But other than that, there's never been a female elected in the state of Arizona. So my critics like to say I use it as a qualification. It's not a qualification, but it's making history is a big deal. I think it's a big deal to be part of making history for sure.
And were you excited to see that the incumbent won his primary because you think that might be an easier race to go up against? Or would a challenger have been an easier race, you think, for you in that one?
I don't know. I don't know. I think I've been told different things. But the incumbent winning, I think, in the margin with which he won, I think shows that, 39%? I can't remember what the what Rosenthal got for the vote percentage, but that's a lot of votes that didn't want him to be sheriff. And you combine that with the Republican votes, I think we have a chance. I think we definitely have a chance in this race. It's been done before, and I think we can do it again.
Well, Pima County elected a Republican sheriff in 2016 with Napier defeating Nanos, and Nanos came back to win a very narrow victory in 2020. And so both of those races were incredibly competitive and close, in spite of being down ballot on some rather contemptuous presidential tickets as well, too. And that's something you're staring down the barrel of right now as well, too, on the general, correct?
Yeah, with Biden dropping out, I think it makes it a little bit of it's a different race now than it was. So that's a little concerning. But I think the message has to be that I have that R next to my name, but the office of sheriff shouldn't be a partisan issue because it's law enforcement, it's public safety. That's nonpartisan, right? Like that should not be a partisan issue. And I think we just have to get people to try to look beyond that letter to give me that vote. I mean, I'm not making legislation. I'm not, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just I'm enforcing public safety.
Heather, one of the compliments that I hear about you over and over again, and of course the Tucson Crime Free Coalition endorsed you proudly, is that you're somebody that's extremely relatable, you're genuine, your message really resonates, and it's because you're a down-to-earth person and you've been open with a lot of the things that you've dealt with in your personal life that a lot of other people in this community are dealing with as well. How do you... you know, intend to keep telling your story and connecting with people to keep that relatability up?
You know, I grew up super poor. And when I say super poor, I mean like the food stamps, but back when they came in books, you know, that's how we bought our food, and we got food boxes from WIC, and you know, I have, that's my whole story. Right. And, when I was in sixth grade, I used to live in these apartments across the street from my middle school, and they were so dirty and run down, and it was just really embarrassing to live there. And every morning before school, I would sneak out the back door of the apartments, and I would run down an alley and make it look like I was walking from the houses, not from the apartments, because I didn't want anybody to see that I was coming from the apartments. And that was kind of my life growing up. I had to cover up for kind of who I was. And so I promised myself authenticity, that I would just be who I am. And if you want me, you know who you're getting, right? So that's why I'm so upfront about all of my challenges, you know, with my son, my personal finances, you know, the whole thing. I'm not afraid to tell you about them. And if you still want me, you know, that's great. And that's kind of how I've been. And I know that's so different in politics today, but it's the only way I can run. It's just who I have to be. So,
well, we salute you. Congratulations, Heather. It looks like you are on your way to the general election, as winning the Republican primary last night to come up from where you've come from. We appreciate you taking the time to join us on Jump in Tucson today as well. When we come back after the break, we're going to break down the Pima County supervisor races as well, too. Thank you again for joining us on Jump in Tucson, Heather.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great job, Heather. Congratulations.
You're listening to Josh Jacobson and Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson, our last segment over here. We are live with Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Welcome back, Josh.
Good morning, Grant.
Hey, so one of the things that I love about Jump in Tucson is how we keep things local, right? There are so many opportunities for you to go read about the presidential race or the Senate race, but there are so few opportunities to pay attention to what's actually happening here in the 520. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton coming up from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. We've always got Dr. Ed Ackerley on Fridays as well, too. But we're going to break down what I think is actually one of the most important positions in governance of all of Southern Arizona, and that's the Pima County Board of Supervisors districts. There are five of those, and we've got about 7 minutes here. Let's go down and spend maybe a minute per district and break down where we're at for our listeners on this election Wednesday over here, July 31st. Let's start with District 1, Josh. What do you think about the Democrat side of things over there?
Well, I think that we definitely have Supervisor Scott in that race, and it's going to be a really interesting position for Supervisor Scott, depending upon the way the Board of Supervisors turn out. Supervisor Scott he's been kind of a swing vote in the past, but if we get some of the other folks in these seats, his position would become, I think, vastly different, because he would potentially start to look even more moderate than he does now. You know, there's a lot of times where he makes votes that are the deciding vote, but I think that if we see a different dynamic on the Board of Supervisors, he might be in more opposition with the further progressive and left-leaning folks if they got elected.
He had a bit of a challenge in the primary over there. Young 21-year-old Jake Martin got a few votes from him. I was kind of surprised to see that particular turnout.
You know, and that kid, I got to give that kid kudos. I mean, young kid, I don't know much about him, but clearly he's, I believe, fresh out of college. And the kid got out there, he hustled, and he did get some votes.
There's that ground game like we were talking about, right?
Absolutely.
He had a good ground game banging on the homeless issues. On the Republican side, running unopposed was Steve Spain. And so we're going to have a Rex Scott, Steve Spain challenge coming up in the general in District 1. Why don't we go over to District 2, where there was a hot Republican primary going on over there.
Yeah, there sure was. I have to say congratulations to everybody that was a candidate, everybody that ran in these races. It takes so much. It takes so much to get out there, put your life on hold, and essentially just campaign. So, John Backer was the victor there, and we need to see what his plan is going to be going moving forward.
And so John, having won the Republican primary in District 3, is going to line up against incumbent Matt Hines.
And that is not going to be an easy race because I'm looking at the voter breakdown right now. We've got 42,487 Democrats in that district, 23,413. That's a huge deficit to come from, but it is really important for us to have people like John Backer in these races, getting the message out, talking about the things that are important to the constituents that would support him. Otherwise, we never have those conversations.
And then think about District 3 over here, right? We've got J.L. Wittenbraker running unopposed on the Republican side. Our listeners probably know her name as the Republican candidate for mayor of the city of Tucson last year. And she's going to be going up against, it looks like, Jen Allen over here, who absolutely trounced the competition in spite of a lot of bipartisan support for Edgar Soto, who came in second in this race right now. It looks like Jen Allen is going to be our presumptive candidate for District 3.
Yeah, and again, she it appears that Jen Allen raised obviously the vast majority of the money. I believe more money than everybody else combined. Clearly, she had a ground game, and she appears to be in the same camp with the Grijalvas, Laura Conover. She's got that built in infrastructure and support behind her. And again, District 3, that's got a little bit tighter of a margin. We've got 43,000 Democrats registered in that area, 34,673 Republicans. And then the independents, we've got about 41,256.
Interesting.
So again, when we're talking about ground games, that potentially could be a winnable district with the right ground game, the right strategy, and the right talking points. The talking points that the people in that district are truly concerned about.
And then in District 4, there was no primaries going on. Actually, in District 4 or 5. In 4, you've got incumbent Steve Christie sliding through on the Republican side against competitor Vanessa Bechtol on the D side. What do you think about that race?
Well, Supervisor Christie has done a great job being the Lone Ranger for, quite a while on the Board of Supervisors.
The last of the Mohicans, I call him there.
The last of the Mohicans. He really enjoys being able to bring up points that he can. A lot of times it's not necessarily for the vote, it's for the conversation. I look at Supervisor Christie, and it's, I think about what we were just talking about with Congressman Eli Crane. People in positions where they are so outnumbered, their constituents want them to fight and to talk about the things that are important to them, knowing that they're not going to have consensus on the Board of Supervisors very often. Seldom. I think that it's even a joke on the Board of Supervisors when they have a unanimous vote, they do like a little celebratory clap and they say, wow, it was actually unanimous this time. So in that district, we've got 43,478 Democrats to 50,910 Republicans. That, that obviously leans in Supervisor Christie's favor. We've got 44,405 independents. And again, Supervisor Christie is, he's going to need support. People are should not be taking this race for granted by any means. We've got to get out there and help Supervisor Christie.
Without a doubt. And lastly, bringing up District 5 over here, Adelita Grijalva running unopposed. There is no Republican candidate. There is an independent in Val Romero and in that heavily Democrat-leaning District 5.
So let's do the independents first here. We've got 36,584 independents. We've got 16,550 Republicans, and then Supervisor Grijalva has an army of Democrats behind her, 53,573 Democrats.
Oh, my. Well, thank you for that breakdown, Josh, of all five supervisor districts. I want you listeners to pay attention to these ones out here. This is important stuff. This is going to change the course of governance in Pima County, not just for business, but for citizens alike. And although it's not as sexy as those gubernatorial or presidential races, these ones are truly, truly more impactful on our lives. And so I'd like to thank again Congressman Juan Ciscomani and Republican Sheriff candidate Heather Lappin for coming on Jump Into Tucson. Josh Jacobson, Tucson Crime Free Coalition, thanks for spending part of your morning with us.
Thank you, Grant, and thank you, everyone.
No, thanks, listeners. It's been an engaging hour breaking down elections with you on Jump In Tucson. Look forward to joining you next week. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.